All right, hello everyone, and welcome to Heavy Pod is Heavy Cast. That's it.
That's
Bye.
it. Okay.
No, this week we are back doing the Dark Tranquility deep dive as voted by our patrons. Dark Tranquility is a band. What are your thoughts, Ryan, about this information?
I had this is a band that I had never listened to before, I don't think. I know the artwork of their albums.
Most of it is done by Niklas Sundin, their guitarist, at this point, their former guitarist, who also does my artwork, by the way.
That's fucking awesome. Like I when I read it, like, I mean, this is getting super ahead, but like the losing passion for music thing, like that broke my heart.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, but we'll see, I guess.
Okay, yeah, I'll tell you later. I guess the guitarist probably like left because he lost like the passion for playing music.
We'll talk about it. I know Niklas
Okay.
personally a little bit, so I have some, insight as to his stuff. But anyway, we'll
Yes,
talk
please.
about it.
Thank you.
Let us turn back the clock back to 1989. I'm 1 year old, and in Gothenburg, Sweden, there's a bunch of people, and these people are all, making some cool ass music. These people, actually, Dark Tranquility technically predates At the Gates. So you could potentially call them the originators of melodic death metal, maybe.
Ooh.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of kids, and these kids are, listening to death metal. They like death metal, but they feel like, Swedish folklore music has a lot of kind of, rich melodic texture, and death metal doesn't. And that's kind of not fun. So they're like, let's make some death metal, but hot take, let's actually make the listener emotionally connect to the music. And we put together guitarist Mikael Stanne, guitarist Niklas Sandin, vocalist Anders Frieden, and a few other people, and they put together this band called Septic Broiler. And they were making more, early death style death metal back then. They put together a demo, but then a few years later, they put out this album under the name Dark Tranquility, the album called Sky Dancer. And I think the Sky Dancer album does not predate the first At the Gates album. First, Red in the Sky, ours is 92, Sky Dancer is 93. So I guess Red in the Sky is technically the first Melodeath album. And then we have Sky Dancer. And then we have a genre that is defined. And a genre that is defined in contrast to each other, I would say. Because if you look at some Melodeath, like At the Gates, it's basically, death metal with some minor key rhythms, and just a little bit more kind of a melodic structure. But if you look at what Dark Tranquility is doing, even since day one, it's quite different.
I would agree with
So
that.
Niklas, in an interview, Niklas described Sky Dancer, and I think let's get off with this, and then this, because I think this kind of ends up defining a lot of Dark Tranquility. So Niklas said, Sky Dancer is a very weird album, then there really isn't anything else like it for good and bad. Most of the songs contain 20 plus riffs that are never repeated in the same way, and the integration of clear vocals and acoustic guitars were extremely unorthodox for its time, as were the advanced use of counterpoint and recurring musical motifs. Not to mention the lyrics. It's unashamedly pretentious and a good example of the kind of over-the-top seriousness and attempt to define the world that only one can achieve with a young person's worldview, a teenage mind that knows and understands everything. So I think that that's the interesting thing in terms of Sky Dancer, and I think even for the rest of the band's career, Sky Dancer is a unique sound because it's very neoclassical, black metal influenced, but it's really aggressive in its usage of counterpoint. So for the listener who may not know what the term counterpoint means, it's typically a term used in classical music where normally, in more typical melodic death metal, you would have your regular harmony where, one guitar is playing one riff and the other guitar is playing that riff, but like, you know, a third higher, which kind of gives you this, you know, sweet, rich sound to it. Think like a lot of the middle era In Flames stuff, right? You kind of have the two guitars playing something similar. Or the intro to No Way to Heal by Trivium. Those kind of two guitars having close, like they're following the same pattern, but, you know, augmenting each other. Whereas counterpoint means the two guitars are actually doing something completely different that are, you know, one of them is ascending, one of them is descending, or something along those lines. They still outline a kind of general similar sense of chord progression, but they're coming at it from completely different angles. And the example here would be, you know, the intro to Crimson Winds by Dark Tranquillity on this album. So that was, you know, at the time, mind-blowing for me. This isn't the first Dark Tranquillity album I listened to, but, you know, when I got into the band way back, and then I went back in their catalog and listened to this album, I was like, wow, this is like something else. And then I think Necrophagist really mainstreamed that approach. You know, they did a lot of counterpoint in their songs, and it's been, like, much more popular since then. But this was one of the first instances of metal of doing that.
Yeah, it's like for me at first when I first heard the album, I was like, I'm not really sure how I feel about it, because mm-hmm. it felt very different to me. But also, I felt like I had heard like some of its influence in later music. And then upon re-listening, I was like, actually, I think this is a pretty cool album, because it has kind of the novelty of having Anders from
In Flames
on vocals. And also the acoustic guitar arrangements and like just the way it sounds is very, very unique for the time. It's clear as hell.
Yeah.
And sorry, go ahead.
There's some black metal influences here, and also like, a lot of early Swedish Melodeath is really heavily influenced by Swedish kind of folk arrangements.
Mm-hmm. And I also like that so this album has it's one of the albums, I think, with a female vocalist that's featured on a song. And it's like, I like that it's not just like a like couple minute feature or whatever. Like, it pretty much is like doing the song with him in equal, and also it's very the vocal style is very interesting.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel kind of not atonal, but I don't know how to describe it. I'm not like great with describing music stuff sometimes.
No, yeah, I mean, you know, you can just listen to A Bolt of Blazing Gold, and it's pretty clear kind of what's going on there.
Yeah,
I think this album is like a really, you know, forward thinking album. Like, there was nothing really like this in the metal scene at the time, and the one feeling that I would describe a lot of Dark Tranquillity stuff, especially the earlier stuff, would be like intense melancholy and nostalgia. Like, it just evokes this like really intense feeling. It's like a really kind of, their sound isn't like super deep, you know, the production isn't like all encompassing, but the way that the sound is focused is really kind of drawing you to this direction of this feeling of, you know, something close to your heart that you know deeply and you've known all along. And it kind of always touches that feeling, I feel, is kind of the emotion that they're always going for.
Yeah. And they will do, like, they have many different paths to get there, like, through their albums. I mean, it doesn't always sound the same, too, which I think is one of the cool things about the band. Like, they have periods because they've been around for so long.
Yeah, and they have, you know, the sound. They kind of pick a sound for a period, and then they just kind of run with it.
And this one is melancholy. I think this album,
yeah, and I think for the time, you know, the production is not really good. They've since put out like a remastered version, I believe, that makes it sound better. But like, I think if there's one thing to kind of hold against this album, it would be that the mix and the engineering isn't really good, and the vocals aren't, you know, really great. I mean, it's not that Anders was a bad vocalist at the time, but you know, the kind of really kind of black metal shriek type style that he's going for here is just kind of a little bit odd, and Mikael is just such a better vocalist.
Yes, he is much better.
So I think, you know, Crimson Winds, A Bolt of Blazing Gold, these songs are like just ridiculous. And I think when I listened to this album, it was bundled together with Of Chaos and Eternal Night. That was the, like, Sky Dancer and Of Chaos Eternal Light was like the bundled version I received, but I Did you listen to Of Chaos and Eternal Night separately or together?
I listened to Of Chaos and Eternal Night as like a separate release.
I see. So how was that experience? Because for me, it was always like the, you know, rest of the album, but that might be kind of you maybe viewing it a little bit differently.
I thought it was pretty good because I, so at 19, so like for you, like the album was just like longer. For me, it's only 19 minutes. So like, to me, it's brisk, it's fast. It also feels like it, like the production completely changes. Like the mix, everything changes. So like, I can't imagine hearing like the last song on Skydancer and then all of a sudden you're just like pulled right into this. Like,
yep.
It's good though. I think, Mikhail is a much better vocalist. I think he has, like even when he's just doing like the like death metal growl, that I don't know how to even do it, but like, I think he's doing that with much more, more oomph than, Anders was.
Yeah, and I think it, you know, this sound on this serves as a transitionary to their next full length release gallery.
Yeah,
but I think it's kind of in the middle. And quick fun fact for people who don't know, like I'm obviously like a massive Dark Tranquillity fan, and Of Chaos and Eternal Night, you know, Of Chaos and Salt is the subtitle of my album Entropy. That's where that comes from.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that it came from, I didn't know that that was a reference to that. Like, so when I thought it was Of Chaos and Salt, I was like, it's because Noyan likes making people salty. Like, that's what I always kind of figured in my head.
So there's a triple meaning in there. Like, one of them is literally just, if Of Chaos and Salt basically causing chaos and, making people salty, you know, trolling, that's kind of, you know, the self-deprecating nod there.
Mm-hmm.
Partially it's a reference to Of Chaos and Eternal Night. And also, it's partially a reference to, you know, salt is kind of, you know, referenced in like a biblical context of like, you know, purification. And it's like the theme of the album is finding calmness and purification of your life in chaos. Basically, you know, I'm a self-proclaimed nihilist, and I think life is chaos. And the album is about kind of making sense of life. So that's what the, you know, the triple meaning of that is.
That's awesome. That's seriously, like, I love that you broke down and explained that to me, and I actually had like a small bit of it. Thank you.
Yep. So there's a lot of Dark Tranquillity references in a lot of the stuff that I do, but I love it. And yeah, I think the Of Chaos and Eternal Night, you know, for me it was always kind of, you know, the odd part of Skydancer. The like Of Chaos and Eternal Night. And like it never really stood out to me. I don't like the songs here are good, but I think they don't necessarily stand out as strongly as, you know, something on the gallery. Like, the production is still not great, and the sound is not fully formed. But I think, overall, Skydancer and Of Chaos and Eternal Light are, like, if you consider that these came out in, like, 93, 94, it's pretty, pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, like,
especially,
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just one last thing. They had no template at the time, right? This is basically, they came up with this.
Yeah. Like, I feel like if I heard Chaos and Eternal Night, Of Chaos and Eternal Night, and the gallery back-to-back, I'd be like, yeah, like, that makes sense to me. That feels more like it's a cohesive thing. And you're right, I think that the gallery does get it better. Like, yep. I'm still blown away by thinking about Skydancer and then that. And because, like, even thinking that they're only a year apart, like, that's intense.
Yep. And then 1 year later, they come out with The Gallery. So I think The Gallery is like a fucking incredible, all-time great album. And here they start working with Fredrik Nordström as their producer, you know, the legendary Swedish male death producer. First of all, the artwork is insane. It's amazing. Like, it's just so powerfully evokes a feeling. And you already are kind of put into a mindset by that. I think there's two versions of this artwork, by the way. The one that I'm familiar with is the, you know, orange kind of walking towards like this Escherin kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what the other artwork is, but anyway, so
I don't either. I've only seen the artwork you're talking about.
Yeah, I think there's another version of it that's kind of done more in like modern style of Nicholas when the album was re-released or something. But I mean, this is the classic artwork. Anyway, yeah. I feel like this must have been done by the same person who did In Flames is Horacle. I'll look into it while we're talking about it.
It's pretty. It's nice album art. I really like it.
No, it's great. It's done by this person named Christian Wallen, and let's see. There's Discogs is listing their credits as vocalist. But I don't care. Yeah, okay, it is. This person did like Tiamat, Atheist, Therion, In Flames, Dark Tranquility, At the Gates. Yeah, Slaughter of the Soul is the same artist as this artwork.
Oh, okay, so it is a classic.
Yep. Amorphis. Yeah, basically a lot of the bands from that era. Okay, so this album is just bangers back to back. It's insane. Like, Punish My Heaven is such a strong opening statement. Punish My Heaven is like almost like a tech death track.
Yeah.
For the time, especially. And this is kind of where Dark Tranquility really kind of stake their claim on the scene of Melodeath as a unique sound, in that they basically took the, you know, aggressive death metal style of At the Gates, and then on top of it added like neoclassical elements, really strong neoclassical, and like a much stronger focus on melody while still retaining that melancholical feeling. And it's amazing. Like, the production on this album is so good. And like, they're not afraid to kind of slow down and give you a more emotional song, like Letha, for example. Turkish people really love Letha. I don't know why. It's like a song that's like really popular in Turkey, but like, Punish My Heaven, Eden Spring, The Dividing Line, The Gallery, Silence and the Firmament, Withdrew. Like, these are all just like all time great songs.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this release in particular. I like what you said, like, the first track is basically like a tech death track almost. Like, yep. I at one point I comment on like the drummer doing some woodblock work, like at 3:45 or whatever the fuck that's called, and it sounds so cool.
Yep.
And also the vocal phrasing at like 1:15 of Silence and the Firmament Withdrew is like kind of off in a very interesting way.
Yep. So I think that's one thing. Mikael is like a vocalist that always kind of pushes his own boundaries. First of all, his lyrics are just so amazing. Like, if there was one lyricist that I would say, you know, that is the best lyricist in metal, I would pick Mikael. Like, throughout the years, first of all, he's written so much stuff and it's all consistent, all good. And the way he kind of interleaves kind of metaphor with the themes that he's talking about is just like poetic. Like, his lyrics are so cool. And he always kind of tries to do different things with his voice, and his delivery is always, you know, interesting and never goes for like the most obvious thing. And like, it's really, really cool how his style has evolved throughout the years. I've spoken to him a couple of times. He's also like a really cool, a really smart dude. And he's just super chill. I love it.
No. That's perfectly fine. I mean, I would say like the reason for these, in my opinion, these deep dives, in my opinion, is to like not only like talk about things you don't necessarily like, but also talk about those things that you love and like those people who inspire you. And like, there's a reason you know so much about this band, because like they're good. And also, go ahead.
It's easy to kind of forget where all this stuff came from. Like, a lot of people today who would be into, if you play The Gallery to them, they were like, wow, this shit's fucking amazing. But it's kind of, you know, lost to time in some senses. Like, to some people, it's so obvious and good that it's not worth mentioning. And to others, you know, it's kind of old and before their time, so they haven't really kind of dug deep. But if anything that you take away from this deep dive, just go listen to fucking The Gallery. It's like an incredible album.
It really is. Like, for an early for an early career record, like, it is an incredible album.
Even for like a not early career record, I know what you mean. I think you're saying in the sense that like it's even more amazing that they did this early on. But like, if a band, like a mature band who's like 10 albums in, put this out, or like 5 albums in, whatever, like, This is an album that I think any metal musician would be proud putting out.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is a consistently good record that also doesn't really... it defines the style that it's in, but it also doesn't feel like it's, like, sticking to anything. I don't know how to describe that. It just doesn't feel like it's, like, trying too hard. Like, at one point...
Yeah, it's... Like it's completely its own thing. It defines the template.
Yeah, in the dividing line around 45 seconds in, I was like, they're just doing like a straight rock and roll like Led Zeppelin riff, and I was fucking in for it. Like I didn't care that like it just sounded like it belonged. Like, they could have they had me at any point there. I could have just gone along for the ride.
Yep, and like then you'll have these like passages of like you know acoustic guitars, the female vocals like. Letha just being like the super melancholic song, or you'll have these like, you know, harmonized guitar leads. And it's like, this is like, you know, you can take any kind of element of this album and just distill it down to that and make a whole kind of sound out of it. Like there are bands out there whose sound is just like one aspect of this.
Yeah. You get a lot here, and it doesn't sound... It doesn't even sound like it's jumbled, which is impressive.
Yeah, it's completely consistent and coherent, and it's just, like, everything is just hitting in its peak. Like, the production sound is great, the lyrics are great, the vocals are great, the composition is consistently interesting. Like, a lot of challenges with Melodeath could often be that it's predictable or repetitive, but that's not the case here either. Like, the arrangements are just, like, big brain stuff, like they're, you know, constantly driving the song in a new direction and adding elements, referring to elements earlier on. And like, even when they repeat something, you know, it's repeated in an interesting way. I think a lot of the credit to that, you know, breaking the repetition, obviously the instrumental section is great, but also Mikhail deserves a lot of the credit for kind of, with his delivery, kind of pushing through a section that would otherwise be the same, just making it fresh and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just sorry. I'm trying to gather my thoughts. I like the way the adrenaline from midway through infinity shifts into mm-hmm. like the super brooding lathe. Is that how you say it? Yep. Lathe?
Letha.
Oh, because you already said. I'm yep. sorry, Letha. and
it's Greek.
Ooh, what does it mean?
It's the it's forgetfulness, which is again the kind of theme of the song. It's the river in like Greek mythology where if you drink the water from it, you'll forget everything. And,
oh, okay.
It's the theme of the song is, you know, basically the pain of a previous relationship and trying to forget that.
Yes, that...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the melancholy of and the brooding aspect of, like, that particular song is... it feels very unique to them.
Yeah, it's like a really powerful melancholy. It's not like... So that's the thing with Dark Tranquility is that when they're doing, like, the sad boy stuff, which is quite often, it's not like low energies. It's high energy sad boy. Like, when the... Hold me near... Unravel the stars, like speed through the heavens and speed through. Like, it's just like this kind of orator energy that Mikhail has when he's talking, even like doing this sad stuff.
Yes. I completely agree. And
the fucking lyrics, especially on this song, like, fucking in currents of cobalt, you storm through my heart to sever, to puncture the memories that burn. Let's sweep through the arteries in sharp stabs of pain, your tail and like fingers to kill me again. Like, it's just fucking. What the fuck is this, man? This is like quality poetry.
Yeah, it's and it's not like it's not corny in the way that like Skydancer kind of is, in the way that it like has that pretension. Like the man is no longer in the tower. We are in a different realm of emotion.
Yeah, and it's like it's not corny. It's not on the nose. It's not like trying too hard to be like you know, big brain. It's just like. Quality poetry.
Yes.
And like it's really in this, I'm just laser focusing on this one song, but obviously it applies to like the rest of the album and just a lot of Dr. Tranquility's discography in general. But like the, I mean, what he's talking about, what he's singing about is always like stuff that's really relatable. But the way he kind of sings about it makes it sound kind of a way that kind of more compelling to you. Because like basically this song's like, I'm sad, I want to forget, you hurt me. That's it. And if this was like a, you know, a metalcore band, it would just be like, you are a scum slut. But this... you know, the fucking band, right? The fucking end world. But no, instead it's like, so cleansed through a floodlight, I appear renewed and reforged, caressed by the sweet balm and blessing of forgetfulness, empty and strong. Like, so good, man. Anyway, sorry, I could just like, I could fanboy over Mikhail lyrics all day, but let's move on to The Mind's Eye.
Yes, please.
So I like this 2 years later.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think The Mind's Eye is a really good album, but I feel like it's kind of eclipsed by the albums before and after it.
Yep, it is 100%.
Like, all of the songs are great. Like, this album is super, super good. But it's like, I mean, you have the gallery, and it's hard to follow that up. And the interesting thing, though, about this album is that you can hear the beginning of the direction that they're going with Projector, where the production, like, the sound on the gallery is, like, really sharp and really focused. With The Mind's Eye, you're starting to hear that they're kind of expanding the sound a little bit and going for, like, creating more of a soundscape kind of thing.
Yes.
And there's kind of the really early phases of that. And that's kind of interesting. But I think, you know, either the gallery or the projector are just like doing the other ends of that spectrum better. But like, still, this is a really good album. Like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with this album. This is a, you know, if this is one album you listen to, you'll walk away happy.
Yeah. I think it's a, I think this is a good album. And I think if you did listen to it, it would rule. Because I like that it gives you a little bit more listening space. Like, in the mix, it feels like there's more room for things to breathe. And like you said, they're moving towards the soundscapes. That, to me, feels very apparent with what, like, as soon as you hear it, like, on the first song, it's immediately different from the gallery. And I think it differentiates itself at least enough to... It differentiates itself enough to where I feel like it should be noted that it is worth listening to.
Yeah.
But, God, you're so right about it getting eclipsed by, like, by Projector and the gallery. it sucks so bad for this album.
But it's such a good album. But, like, you know, here you'll start to hear the thing they do where they, like, just kind of let a chord ring a little bit longer. And then there's some other kind of lead that kind of takes the lead, right? Like, in the gallery, you'll much more often have, like, a guitar doesn't sit for a long, right? They'll just, like, keep doing another thing. Whereas here, it's like one guitar is just kind of, all right, now, you know, let me, all right, here's the chord, then you go kind of do it. And then the other guy comes in and, you know, adds a little bit more. And then there's just kind of a little bit more, you know, here there's a little bit more ebb and flow to the riffs. Whereas in, like, in gallery, it's always, like, there's always something going on. And here they start to kind of be like, okay, you know, let's kind of take away a little bit to give you a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I feel like this one is, it's more of like an atmospheric work as opposed to what comes after, which is like a blend of everything, but also very much its own thing.
Yep. And so, The Mind's Eye is a great album.
Yeah, I was gonna say "Tidal Tantrum" is my favorite song from the album. I think it almost reminds me of like an Focus era Cynic song, for some reason.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Like the kind of
the dun da 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 dun dun dun.
Yeah.
Sorry, that doesn't even sound like what it was.
No, but I think I know what you mean. Like the kind of the clean guitars and kind of. The way the leaves come on top of it, and the you have the like phaser-y kind of sounding guitar lead over to the rhythms. I think
that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense to me. I will take that.
Okay, But then we have Projector. And Projector at the time was a really controversial album. This is the first album where they have the keys player as the full-time-ish member. I thought it was. Like they had like a much more Martin Brandstrom was like a much more prominent member of the band. So it's really influenced by, I would say, kind of some electronic music elements. So this sound to me is like what I would say the defining sound of like the modern Gothenburg. Like previously, you know, the Gothenburg death metal sound is like very well known. But then after this album, there's a much more kind of industrial feeling of like the isolation of the modern age that they capture in this album. I love this album. I mean, at the time it was a really controversial album, but I came to know the band after this album was out. So to me, it was, you know, part of the repertoire, but, you know, adding clean vocals, electronic elements, you can imagine that the death metal fans were very mad about it, but.
Oh yeah.
Therein is an incredible song. Like, Therein is one of the best songs that they've ever made. And the video, I think, really, I don't know if you've seen the video for Therein.
I have not.
It really captures the vibes. So let me send you the video real quick so you can just kind of like mute it and open it in like a separate thing and like take a look at it while we're talking. But it's basically like footage of the city just like time-lapsed and, you know, sped up. And then Mikhail, like, lights in the background, kind of just this kind of, you know, the 9-to-5 feeling, the kind of isolation in the city kind of vibes that the you can really kind of see what they're going for there. And again, another cute thing in the video for my song Omnipotence Paradox, where CJ from A Sense of Gravity is guesting. And his bits are just his face overlaid on top of each other as he's singing. And that's the reference to this video.
We love references. We love them.
And like,
I do.
Also, like, I also captured like footage of the city in the video. Like, it's just a reference to this video. So, I love this video.
This is awesome. Because the clouds are going and he's just sitting there singing. God.
Yeah, it's and like
howling.
The lyrics again. I'm just gonna go to the lyrics, and so I obviously there's a big change in the sound of the band at this point.
Yes,
they basically kind of really expanded the soundscape and slowed down a little bit and like added many more layers. But it's somehow it's even harder than before. Like in terms of the capturing the sensation of melancholy and nostalgia and kind of. This sense deep down that there's something wrong with like the way I exist in this society. I'm alienated, and it kind of really captures that. And again, the lyrics: gentle storm, thundering silence, inferior force, uncontrolled calm, vital unlife, logic, chaos, logic. The tone of which his birth ascend, the beat that of a heart descend, repeating in the infinite, an insight made it clear. Order stormed the surface where chaos set the norm. Had there always been a balance? Surely not. Therein lies the beauty. It was solid yet ever-changing. Like, the fucking, these are so good lyrics, and they're just, like, kind of so good at evoking a feeling. And Mikhail doing clean vocals here for the first time in, like, a major capacity is also really interesting. But anyway, go ahead. Your turn.
No, I mean, I think to me, the strongest element is, like, him doing those, the clean vocals. And it just sounds like it's coming from the depths of his soul. It is powerful. And you're right in the way that it expresses the melancholy even further. And with those electronic elements that they add, it is a powerful album. And I can see why it gotten, like, I know the Grammys don't mean shit or whatever, but like to get nominated for one, I know some people would probably be like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And I kind of get why even people who are, like, on some sort of panel for, like, an awards thing would be like, this shit's good.
Yep.
At least they should be.
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, the, in some ways, I think this album is not there yet in terms of the sound that they're going for. You know, it basically, this album sets the template for everything that comes afterwards. Like, even today in like Moment, you can hear kind of the sound that they set here. And I think this is their most influential album for the rest of their sound. And I think this, this album changed the game. Like, this is in 1999. And if you look at other albums that came out in 1999, you know, In Flames is Colony, Opeth's Still Life, Bodom's Hatebreeder, Slipknot, self-titled. There was, like, you know, nothing really like this out there in terms of blending the melody, melancholy, and kind of industrial stuff. And, like, you know, basically, there were individual elements of this out there by other bands, like, you know, Emperor's Nine Equilibrium, Typo Negative, Nevermore's Dreaming Neon Black. But this album just kind of completely opened up a new perspective of, like, we can do the Melodeath stuff, but we can do more with that sound. And that was, like, really interesting. Also, like, you know, coinciding with In Flames is Colony. Of course, like, these two bands are, like, really close to each other, right? You know, they shared members many times, and they've toured together many times. They're, like, you know, very close friends. Mm-hmm. So In Flames also kind of going in a different direction at the same time isn't that surprising. But that basically kind of came to define the new Gothenburg sound together with this. And I think Dark Tranquility went in a better direction than In Flames with that. Just a more interesting direction.
I agree. And even then, I say that as someone who has heard early career In Flames and, like, some kind of mid-career In Flames, but largely has not heard what a lot of people consider to be bad late-career In Flames.
Yeah, I mean, there are some really classic mid-era In Flames albums that are, like, you know, post-1999.
But oh, I think Come Clarity rules! Sorry.
Yeah. Also, Clayman. That's great, too.
Like, yes, Clayman fucking rules.
But I think Projector is just, like, no other band could have made this album. And it's just, like, such a interesting and cool album.
And it still hits. And in the year 2021, I listen to it, and it hits emotionally. It does not change. And that's my opinion.
In some ways, it hits more.
Yes. Like, watching it with the, like, the footage of therein, and, like, all the clouds going by, and the like, footage of all the cars and everything, and just this chaos combined with also, like, you don't even feel like you're a part of anything. It's just so crazy.
Yeah.
It rules.
So, recommend. Yeah, Therein is fantastic. Go listen to Therein, but also listen to the rest of the album as well.
Yes, I think the whole album.
The standout song here is Therein, because that's kind of where they make their strongest statement of, here's what we're doing.
I think Auctioned hits really hard, too. The piano in Auctioned is incredible.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, The Sun Fired Blanks, Nether Novas, Doberman, those are also really cool songs.
Yep.
Then we have Haven, and this is the album that I got introduced to Dark Tranquility with, actually. And I think this album is, it's hard for me to pick a favorite Dark Tranquility album, because, like, there's, like, three albums from different eras that are all, like, amazing. But this one is perhaps their most well-rounded album, I would say. It could easily be my favorite album. It has some of my favorite songs by them.
Okay.
So the interesting thing about Haven is that, like, I mean, it really follows the sound of Projector, but it takes in, like, a completely new direction. Like, Projector is really focused on a small set of emotions and exploring them really deeply, you know, this kind of alienation, isolation. And Haven kind of grows that a little bit more and explores different areas of that sound and emotional core. And it feels kind of more broader. You know, there's happy songs on Haven. I mean, no Dark Tranquility song is happy, but, like, what I like to call this kind of, like, bittersweet, I'm sad, but I'm fine energy on some of the songs here. And I think Haven is, like, just wall-to-wall amazing songs. Like, The Wonders at Your Feet is like a really cool, like, concert opener type song. It's like a really strong song to open your album yes. with. It's just like a really high energy, like, fun song. And then you get Not Built to Last. And Not Built to Last may well be my favorite Doc Tranquility song. It's just like this. It's in a way similar to Letha. Obviously, it's like a, you know, failed relationship song. But it, both Letha and this have this, like, coming back again, coming back around to the same thing. But, like, now, like, okay. So this is, like, a really interesting songwriting thing that Doc Tranquility does in some of their songs, like this one and Letha, where when you return to a riff from earlier in the song, you kind of return to it with this different energy of, like, okay, I've already been here. Like, I know how this goes. And I'm over it, and I'm stronger now, kind of vibe. Both in the lyrics, the energy of the song. So in, like, the Not Built to Last, when it's like, let me try to remember. Let me look up the lyrics one sec, just so I don't get it wrong. Mm-hmm. But when you come back to the, like, for, in the beginning, what came as no surprise to a jaded mind, the less. And then when you come back around, once again, another instant saved today. It left a print that leads nowhere. Never built to last. And, like, he's, like in the beginning, he's, like, singing, once again, sorry, what came as no surprise. But then, when he comes back, once again, and then, like, the kind of, the guitars are also climbing. So it's, like, you know, the same riff, but now you're, like, you're not sad about it anymore. You're, like, energized about the negative situation, about, like, how you're kind of taking control of it. And the way that they do this is, like, really cool. And I think the kind of the way the songwriting also tells the story of the song, in addition to just the lyrics, is like a really super cool, clever move.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of this record is just that it carries over a lot of the synth elements from the last one, but it ups them even higher.
Yeah, like, and like you have the title track, or like Rundown. Like Rundown is like such a happy, high energy riff about, like, being just completely spent and tired.
Yeah. Like, I always do enjoy those albums where it's almost like that hopeful melancholy. Mm-hmm. Like, that's very cool to me, when you can evoke both of those emotions at the same time effectively.
Yeah, and that's, again, the theme of my album, Entropy of Chaos and Salt, right? This, basically, you're giving in to the chaos of the world, but in a way that you're taking control of. And this album, the emotional core of this album, is kind of what inspired me to do that. Like, and there's so many songs on here that, like, so the thing with Projector and some of the other previous albums as well is that, like, they had songs, but they didn't have moments. I mean, Therein kind of did, and some of those songs, but, like, this one is really going for those, like, big, you know, anthemic crowd moments that are, like, really kind of translate strongly in a live situation, and also, like, really make the songs much more memorable, like, in a moment-to-moment fashion. Not that they didn't do that before, but here it feels like they're really kind of focusing on having all these kind of heavy-hitting moments on the songs.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely are focused, and they will keep getting heavier for, like, the next couple albums.
Yeah. And, you know, like, if you were to listen to one Doc Tranquility album and it was Haven, I'd be, yeah, that's cool. Like, so for me, there's three albums that are, like, key Doc Tranquility albums for me. One of them is Gallery, and one of them is Haven, and the other one we'll get to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these are kind of the era-defining albums for me. But with this era, the era that starts with Projector is just, like, all of the albums are super good. So, yeah.
I mean, I would have to... go ahead.
No, no, go ahead. I was just going to transition.
Yeah, go ahead. No, just transition. That's perfectly fine. I don't even know what I was going to fucking say.
This is just like 2000 and a year after The Mind's Eye. So this band is just like hitting it.
Yeah.
And then in 2002, we have Damage Done. And Damage Done, I think this is the... of the modern era, or like that middle era, that was like the most popular album in Turkey, actually. And here we see them taking the sound from Haven and just making it a lot heavier.
yeah.
No, you go ahead.
No, you're not in.
There's just a little bit of There's lag between us.
So there is. And also, you're not interrupting me. I just, like, I was going to say something. I'm trying to remember, like, what the fuck I was going to say. Sorry, I'm trying to re-pull my notes up. For some reason, I closed them. I also think that it's very interesting that this, as I said, the stuff gets heavier. The clean vocals were maybe, like, on Haven in spots, were they? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
If there were specifically cleans on in Haven.
Yeah, there's like, a few moments in
okay,
there.
But then, like, on this album, it just is completely removed. They're like, nope, we're not doing it.
Yeah.
And then they make it heavier, and they're like, yeah, we gotta have, like, more, like, we have a thicker tone, all that shit. Like, that is so... I like when bands do that.
Yep. Okay, so Treason Wall is one of the best Dark Tranquility songs. They play it live a lot, but just, like, that opening of the drum, and then the fast double bass. Like, that song, okay, I've seen this band, like, many times, and, like, it's just, like, such a fun fucking experience to just, like...
I would definitely like to see them live. So the interesting thing with...
Oh, yeah, they're so good live. They have a live DVD that's, like, obviously not a whole substitute, but, like, it kind of conveys the energy. And it, like, it was basically a live DVD that they made after Fiction that they play both a lot of old songs and both a lot of new songs. It's, like, a really long show. And it's a really fantastic live DVD. You should check that out.
I should.
A lot of that is on YouTube. But, like, Treason Wall is, like, basically the one of the best songs from the band because it has the fast elements, that has the memorable riffs, and then it just has the, like, the type of verse that they do a lot in their more later eras. It's just, like, you know, guitar chugs, stops, Mikhail says something, guitar chugs, stops, and then, like, it keeps building and building and building, and then you have this just, like, hard-hitting chorus. I love Treason Wall so much.
It's worth it. I think you're right.
Like, this album is just, like, such a high energy album because, like, Haven was kind of opening up after Projector, and Damage Done is just, like, really energetic, really heavy, and they still have the, you know, kind of more emotional songs, like Monochromatic Stains is a classic, and actually The Agonist covered Monochromatic Stains, by the way. It's a pretty cool cover with Alyssa. But even when this album does, like, the emotional stuff, it's more heavier. So Monochromatic Stains is almost like Therein and some of the songs on Haven, but just done a lot heavier.
Yes. It is. It feels like it follows in that, like, it's part of that that specific era, but it is just they're like, okay, we have to strip away, like, some of the more, like, not emotional aspects, but, like, we have to, like, strip away the idea that this can't be taken, like, seriously or something. I don't know how to even say it.
I think it's like... It's like you can be sad, but angry about
yes,
it.
That's,
and
yes, that's...
And not sad and moping.
This feels like the anger version of moping, which I think is a very... That's great. That's a great way to describe it.
Yeah, and, like, Final Resistance, Hours Past... Look, okay, so the classic banger songs on this album are Final Resistance, Hours Past in Exile, Monochromatic Stains, Single Part of Two, Treason Wall, Format C for Cortex, Damage Done, Cathode Ray Sunshine, White Noise, Black Silence. So, like, all of the album is just, like, really high quality banger songs. They all play a lot of these live quite often, and they just translate really well. And they're, you know, I don't think there's a down moment on this album, really.
Yeah, I mean, it goes through pretty consistently without having you even trying to pick up what's going on. Not pick up what's going on, but, like, you know what I mean.
Yeah. And I think the cover is really iconic, too, of just, like, Mikhail, just his head exploding as he's trying to hold it in. Just, like, Damage Done, and it's red. It's a really cool cover.
I didn't even know that's what... That's what the cover was.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell, but it's, like, kind of evokes the feeling of just, like, barely contained chaos, which is a good descriptor of the song.
I will say, the reissues for this, Haven and Projector, do have different album covers.
Yeah.
And so I may have seen
those.
It's
within the same vibe.
Okay. It is within the same vibe. I just think, if you say something about an album cover for those albums, that may be why I missed it.
I see. Yeah, I refer to original cover. I have like physical copies of all of these, so like I'm referring to the original.
I love a good physical copy. I do.
Yeah, and like, man, so I think it's really hard to pick and choose between like in this era, because I think this era is my favorite era of Dark Tranquility. And I would say that, you know, each of the album is kind of a little bit different take on the same thing. And it's hard to recommend any of them because they're all kind of within the same thing. So it's kind of a matter of like, what's your flavor that you prefer, right? Like if you kind of want to be like more moping, go to Projector. If you want to be like medium, I would say go to Haven. If you want to be just like really high energy, go to Damage Done. None of these albums you can do any wrong. Damage Done was, I think this is when I got into Dark Tranquility. Like I've heard Haven first, but this, I heard Haven when this album came out and people were listening to it. And I was like, oh, let me check it out. And like the cover to Haven looked cool and I got it. And then like, you know, listened to Damage Done. I was like, holy shit, this album is like just fucking out there. And like, compared to what In Flames is doing at this time, right? In Flames is always kind of the comparison point to Dark Tranquility. And in 2002, In Flames was doing, I think they were doing like Reroute to Remain. And Reroute to Remain is just like a dog shit album. Sorry. and this one is just like, Reroute to Remain is like doesn't know what it wants to be. We'll get that when we do the In Flames deep dive. But this one is just like such a strong, consistent album that just knows exactly what it wants to do. And it just like fucking does it. And just like quintessential Dark Tranquility.
Yeah. I enjoy this album, and I liked it. Once again, falls in the tradition of bands that get heavier over time.
Yep. Speaking of getting heavier over time, then we got Character. And Character is like even heavier than Damage Done, I think. And so it took me a while to get into Character for some reason, because I feel like what Character did was it took the Damage Done sound, it made it heavier, but also added more synths. And is a little bit more industrial, so it didn't really gel with me for quite a while. Mm-hmm. But eventually, you know, eventually I got into it, and it's a solid ass album. The new build is even heavier; like, it just opens like a really heavy song. I will say though, it has what was for the longest time my favorite Dark Tranquility song, which is "Lost to Apathy." That song is just a fucking banger. And again, my song "Reborn in Apathy" is a reference to this song "Lost to Apathy," where, you know, basically the lost apathy is about, you know, literally just being lost apathy, and "Reborn in Apathy" is about how you kind of recover yourself from that state and define yourself as a new person in it. The fucking chorus to "Lost Apathy" again. Unlike any other band, I go to lyrics a lot with Dark Tranquility, because I normally don't care about lyrics at all, but Dark Tranquility's lyrics are all like one of the few bands that actually really care about the lyrics. So like the chorus of the song is just so fucking strong. Look at the shell that is you, empty, fragile, weak. Soon the battle's over, lost to apathy. And the verse of this song is really interesting, because the rhythm of Mikhail's singing is like really off compared to the rhythm of the guitars. Like the guitar rhythm is like da dun da dun da da dun, and like, but sorry, it's actually da dun da da da. Like you have the kind of techie riff in the verse, and then Mikhail's like the onset tone of weak despair fails to resonate. Frayed ends of our binding threads will disintegrate. Like the kind of the riff is just like a blast beats riff, you know, like a tika-tika-tika-tika kind of riff, mm-hmm. But he adds a completely different rhythm on top of it to kind of make it much more emotional, if you will, because like when you have this typical 1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2 kind of blast beat riff, it's hard to do something on top of it that's like interesting, but Mikhail just kind of takes it into a completely different direction. And yeah, he's just such a great vocalist. Sorry.
No, that's why he gets paid the big mellow death bucks. I get it.
Does he, though? I don't know. But hey, I think he's the best mellow death vocalist ever.
Yes. Well, I mean, being paid mellow death bucks isn't like being paid in real money. I do have to clarify.
I mean, it pays more than, you know, some other genres. But
oh,
yeah. and no, I think characters. I'm not going to recommend characters just because I never kind of really connected to it. Mm-hmm. But the new build, The Endless Feed, Lost Apathy, Mind Matters, MI1, all amazing songs. How do you feel about the characters? You tell me about characters, since I have like a weird bias against this album.
I mean, I think that as far as this one goes, I like that it does kind of give off a more synth-heavy vibe. Like, when I was listening to it, I was like, this kind of even gives me more like a... Well, I mean, having listened to a lot of Dream Theater recently, the other DT, mm-hmm. like, I got even some, like, Dream Theater vibes out of it. Not, like, from, you know, the vocals or anything, obviously, but...
Yeah.
Just in some of the heavier compositions the way the synth mixes with that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I get it. But I feel like, again, this album suffers from being stuck in between two really strong albums with a lot of character. it feels almost like transitionary. It has great songs, but I don't feel like it has a strong identity. Like, Damage Done is a really kind of focused album, and this one feels a little bit less focused.
Yeah, and also it doesn't help that the next album is, like you said, a much like stronger album in like an artistic vision sense.
Yeah. All right. And by the way, right before Character, we got their kind of exposures in Retrospect and Denial, the album that's like, you know, B-sides that they've put together throughout the years. Mm-hmm. That's like a cool-ass B-sides album. It's like a whole album of just two CDs. One of them is B-sides, the other one is like live. And it's a cool-ass album. Like, I listen to this album as much as I listen to a lot of other like full albums by the band.
I mean, yeah, it's all solid material. And also, one of the things about it is, in 2009, when they put out those reissues of Projector Haven and Damage Done, they added some of these mm-hmm. like bonus tracks on, remastered or whatever, to those albums. So you may have already yeah. heard them. Like, if you're listening to like if in 2009, if you had picked up these albums and you were listening, you might have already heard some of those too.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I guess now that the reissues have these songs added in, there's less value to it. But at the time, you know, it was like having a whole ass Dark Tranquility album out of nowhere.
I think there's more value to this because it has all of them in the same place, and you're also getting that live disc.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because, like, I mean, Projector Haven, Damage Done are like such like ridiculously strong albums that maybe some of these tracks wouldn't have like had the room to kind of stand out in those albums. They're all already like there's so much, then giving them their own space here maybe, you know, makes them stand out in otherwise where they wouldn't.
Yeah, I like a B-sides
like
album.
I feel like I yeah no I think that's a fair point, like, because like if Haven was like three more songs longer, then maybe it would hit less, whereas if you put those three songs on their own album with a bunch of other stuff, then, you know, you kind of create your own thing. And these albums are like sonically consistent enough that when you put the B-sides together, it tells its own story.
Yeah, and I like it really does just flow consistently. Like, it is like just another good album in their discography, another great album in their discography. It doesn't feel like it detracts from anything. Like, sometimes you hear like a B-side, you're like, oh, well, this is kind of like, I get why I didn't make the album or whatever. But this is good enough to like be its own thing.
Yep. And then we have what I would most comfortably feel calling the best Dark Tranquility album, Fiction. Fiction, I think, is the band's most consistently and powerfully made statement. The cover is unlike any of their other albums. It's super minimalistic, super like Swedish minimalism. The song lyrics are a change in direction from what they've done previously. They're more kind of more minimalistic while still kind of, you know, hitting on the typical notes that Mikael would hit. It has clean vocals. It's like the sound is different. They've kind of, I think this is the, let me double check, but I think this is where they stopped working with Fredrik Nordström. Maybe, let me double check.
I think so.
Yes. Where's the production credits for this album? I can't find them. No, I'm right. Yeah, this is where they stopped working with Fredrik Nordström, and they kind of took charge of their own sound. And it's an amazing album. Like, when this album came out, it blew me away. Because, like, you know, I've been a Dark Tranquility fan for a long time, and this was like a complete breath of fresh air and like reinvention of the band, while still keeping everything that made them good. It's such a different album, but while still sounding the same. Like, Focus Shift is like a song that at the time so like deeply resonated with me, with the lyrics and the kind of different sound. Like, it's just like Character felt like they were kind of, the song was kind of, the sound was fraying apart at the seams because of the way that they're trying to do all these things and they're not coming together. And it's like, you know, that meme of the guy like trying to hold all these melons in there, like, or was it limes? I don't know.
I think it was melons, or no, it could have been limes. Yeah. Oh my God.
Let me look it up. It's limes. Yeah.
Okay.
Whew. But like Character kind of felt like that. And this feels like razor sharp, the most focused that they've ever been. I love this album so much. It's like, going back to lyrics of Focus Shift, like, I think I have lost my language, whatever I've said I deny. I think I've lost my way. Whatever was missing is gone. I let my focus shift. And like, that just like resonated so good with me. And like, you can tell, I've been reading all these lyrics out to you. The lyrics here are still have this like ethereal quality that Mikhail does, but they're much more kind of pared back. Like, they've, you know, he's kind of reduced some of the flowery language to make it kind of hit more while still existing in this realm that's like he's using metaphor and kind of talking about things from a more poetic angle. But just, it's just much more like focused on minimalism. And, you know, Misery's Crown is the first song where they, for a long time, that has like a very large amount of clean vocals. And it's a different style of clean vocals than he's kind of done before. Like, he's has a really cool clean voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, again, all of the songs on this album are just like so memorable and so strong. It's like a completely different, fresh thing to me.
Yeah. Like, I and also, as far as the album art goes, this is the album art I think I am most familiar with. I've seen this the most places. I've seen it on people's like Topster's collages. I have seen it like, you know, in articles and all. But this art has always stood out to me because like I don't often.
It's so memorable.
It is. It's very memorable. And I also like that, like, it is memorable, but it's also it's not doing too much.
Yeah. But it still does so much with so little.
Yes, like, yes, minimal, yes, minimalism.
Like, Niklas Sundin, of course, is doing the art as you for this one. And, like, it's a new kind of style that he's doing. And this is the beginning of the, like, current Dark Tranquility sound. You know, like, we had Sky Dancer to Mind's Eye, we had Projector to Character, and then we have Fiction Onwards. And this is the kind of more modern sound. I think everything that they've done since has basically kind of been based on this sound.
Yep.
But, like, this is, I would argue, the best iteration of the sound. And I love this album so much. It's just, like, just hit at the right time in my life and kind of completely changed how I view music in some ways. Because, like, the sound of Dark Tranquility has always been kind of hard to pin down. And with Fiction, they just kind of like distilled it to its core. But unlike something like Gojira, where, you know, they've been distilling their sound more and more, this feels like they're just more diluting their sound. With Dark Tranquility, it's like they were doing a bunch of these things. And when you focus it down, it's so much more potent. And I didn't think that it would be something that you could just do, like with a sound that there's the kind of broad with something you hear on Character. This is just like distilling it to its essence, keeping all the elements, but just focusing them so much more to make it so much more powerful.
Yeah, this is another one of those albums where they are once again remaking the template and saying, okay, like, we're going to have these elements, but like right here, they are incredibly strong.
Yep.
It's the start of something
new.
And then,
yep. And then after this, they released their live album, Where Death Is Most Alive, as DVD and as audio as well. And, like, the track list is, like, ridiculous. This is, like, the best live show. I've seen them tour with this set list. Treason Wall, New Build, Focus Shift, Lesser Faith, Wonders at Your Feet, Lost to Apathy, Free Card, Inside the Particle Storm, Nothing to No One, Eden Spring, Insanity's Crescendo, Lethe, Dreamlord Degenerate, Misery's Crown, Therein. Misery's Crown and Therein, back-to-back, is such a fucking gut punch.
God.
My Negation, Punish My Heaven, The Mundane and the Magic, Final Resistance, Terminus, Where Death Is Most Alive. This is just like a ridiculous fucking set list. So good.
I'll have to, so because of the nature of this, like, I usually will, like, visit the like, studio albums and everything, so I will now, like, go back and listen to that live album.
I would say if you have the time, watch
the performance Where of Death it. Is
Yeah, watch the performance. It's so good. And, like, the video production is amazing as well. Like, the lighting and the color grading and whatnot is adds so much to it. But, like, also, Mikhail is such a great frontman. Like, he has so good crowd control and energy. And, like, yeah, it's ridiculous. Okay. Then 3 years later, we got We Are the Void. We Are the Void is like depressed fiction, I would say. Like, it's much more depressed than fiction. There's a lot less guitar work and a lot more like synth work. So I don't really love We Are the Void. I think it has like there's some really cool song. I think The Fatalist, I Am the Void. A few others, like, there's some cool songs in here, but I think that it just doesn't hit as hard as Fiction, because they kind of double down on the wrong aspects of Fiction, in my opinion. How do you feel about this album?
I think it is, I think you're right in that, like, it is more depressed, but, like, I think this is as close as they get to, like, a metalcore sad boy.
Yeah.
Like, I was in reading, like, the wiki for this, seeing that there was a tour that they opened for Killswitch Engage on, where they were also like co-running with the Devil Wears Prada, and that made me laugh.
Yeah,
because, like, I feel like it does, like, kind of feel like that, like a, like that little bit of metalcore energy on this album, like, down to the cover.
Yep. And it's like, I mean, you know, they're clearly influenced by the other stuff going on around them, but they're kind of interpreting it in their own way.
Yeah.
But I feel like I get what they're going for, but it just doesn't come through as strongly.
Yeah, this is not their, like, strongest effort, in my opinion.
Yeah. In fact, I may call it their weakest. I don't know what you think.
I mean, I would say probably, yeah. It's like the one... So, like, I would say out of this one and... this one and Construct are, like, two of albums where I'm like, I don't really, like... they didn't, like, not hit for me, but I can't remember, like, a ton of stuff from my listens.
Yep. Agreed. I think Construct... I completely agree with you. I think Construct is a little bit more enjoyable to listen to, but I don't remember anything from either of them.
Yeah, I think it's a sad truth.
I think the sound of Construct is just kind of more exciting than We Are the Void. Like, We Are the Void just, like I get that they were feeling depressed, but, like, it just is depressing to listen to. Not, like, a good way. It's just, like, it just tires me to listen to We Are the Void, because, like, the whole energy is, like, such a downer energy. Whereas with Construct, I think there's a little bit more power in the sound.
There is. I do like the more industrial elements on Construct, but for some reason it is just, like, hard for me to, like, recall a lot of the album, and I listened to it twice.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I listened to it many times, and I still can't call it more. I think Science of the Noise is a cool track. But like, not much to remember here. Yeah. I think it's kind of like calling back to Projector in some ways in terms of being like more industrial, but like it's just not delivering on it in the same way. I think his lyrics are really cool on Construct. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really like the lyrics on We Are the Void. Construct is basically, I interviewed Mikhail around this, but like this album is kind of more about like, you know, the religion and stuff like that, you know, the religion is a construct, it's kind of the theme of this album. Mm-hmm. And I think they changed the way they kind of write songs with this album. I remember talking about that with Mikhail. Because they were like, you know, they had a massive writer's block during We Are the Void and it was just not working out. So with Construct, they kind of took a different approach towards it. And they kind of, because at the point of like Construct, you know, a lot of them like had kids and they were kind of like, you know, they had grown up, right? They already kind of made it. And then they're like post made it phase with these albums. And it's like, it's hard to kind of find the same energy and anger, right? So I understand where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think the lyrics are generally more about like criticizing modern society from like a more kind of left perspective. And it's like a much more about kind of society, which is interesting. Like this, they haven't really done kind of more societal themes in their lyrics. And I really love the art for Construct. Like there's like three different versions of the artwork and I think they're all really cool. So I think the aesthetic of this, like, I think the musically this album doesn't speak to me and neither does We Are the Void, but I think aesthetically this album speaks to me. So at least I feel more fondly towards it. But yeah, I don't remember much out of either of these albums.
Yeah, I feel like aesthetically Construct is strong, but at the same time, like, I see the cover. I know I'm like, okay, that looks very different for Dark Tranquility. I listen to the music. It's good. But at the same time, I just like, for some reason, it's like my brain is smooth. Just nothing.
No, I agree. Then we get Atoma. Woo! And Atoma is, I think, better than those.
Yes.
But I'm curious about hearing how you feel about Atoma.
I think Atoma, it makes me feel like a barnacle on the bottom of the sea, or like on the bottom of a boat even. I like how, like, so whenever like they talk about like dark and brooding and stuff, this album feels like they are like, okay, we want to like brood and be dark and it but in the new way, and it works. It's awesome. Yep. And also the B-sides from the album, The Absolute, and I'm trying to remember the second song.
Time Out of Place?
Yes. Both of those songs are awesome, like fantastic songs, like just on their own. I think they really capture a good sense of, like the first song even kind of sounds like Mikhail is like sinking while he's singing it. Not in like the, but like it's really cool. I appreciate this album for the strong image it evokes with me.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the title track of Atoma is really cool too. Like it's, again, going along the lines of like Misery's Crown. They're basically trying to do that again. And it works. Like, it's like high energy, you know, while still being sad. Like, I think Dark Tranquility's best vibe is like sad but mad, or sad but okay with it.
Yes.
And I think this album kind of goes for the sad but okay with it kind of vibe. And it just works. Like, it's not as, you know, strong as Fiction. But I think they've basically been able to capture, you know, find something, again, worth saying. And it kind of takes the more industrial elements from the previous two albums and kind of makes them work a little bit better. Like, they, because I think with those two albums, there was just, like, a lot of sonicscape, but there was not a lot of, like, sound. And here they kind of construct more songs out of those.
Yeah, it feels a lot fatter. Like, the synth stuff even feels like it's got, like, a thicker kind of skin to it. And I like that about it.
Yep. And I think around the time of this... Oh, I think we skipped the Zero Distance EP, which was actually really cool.
I did enjoy the Zero Distance EP. I can't believe I forgot to mention that. The Zero Distance EP is all the, like, B-sides from... or some B-sides from We Are the Void.
Yeah.
But they're
much better than the rest of the album.
It's a lot better for some reason.
It's like they took the like good songs out of it.
This makes a good EP.
Yeah. Like Zero Distance is such a fucking amazing song. Like it's
I agree.
Much better than anything on We Are the Void.
And more memorable, even though we forgot to cover it. We're sorry.
Oh no, yeah. So you know, I think skip We Are the Void, listen to Zero Distance. Atoma's okay. Atoma's like I don't think Atoma's turning any heads, but it's like, yeah, this is cool. Like we it's kind of more of that.
Yeah, I don't think Atoma is a head turner, but it will it's like one of those things where if it's an album you sit down and listen to it like once or twice, you'll be like I think you'll appreciate the album for what it is and what it brings to the table.
And Atoma is also the last album that Niklas Sandin is in. So, you know, Niklas, you're right. I mean, maybe there's some elements of him not being interested, but also he moved to America. You know, his wife got an academic job at a university and like a really nice job. So he moved to the USA to support her. And he does, you know, he does his own like electronic music project now. What was it called? I'll look it up in a second. Which is pretty cool, by the way. It's like basically the industrial elements of Dark Tranquility. Just that.
Oh, cool. I'll listen to that, yeah.
Mitochondrial Sun is what it's called. They put out an album last year.
I'll check that out. And by the way, I apologize if I misspoke at the beginning or like said something that was like not
no,
true.
No, no, I mean, that's probably right.
I just read the Wikipedia. Like I said, I'm just a dumb guy that goes on the Wikipedia and reads it and say, I see this and it makes me sad.
But Niklas, like, the thing with Niklas and Mikael is just like the nicest dudes. Like, Niklas is such a cool guy. Anyway, so this is the first album without Niklas, Moment, that is. And instead they have Christopher Amott, who is the founder, one of the founders of Arch Enemy, who's no longer in the band, apparently. I didn't know he left.
Ooh.
I don't know. Yeah, I thought Chris Amott was like the, you know, Chris Amott and Michael Amott, founded the band together. Anyway,
I remember seeing them in guitar magazines when I was a kid.
Yeah. So Moment, how do I feel about Moment?
Moment feels like an extension of Atoma to me. Like, but it also feels a bit more bright.
I think Moment is like, feels to me like a continuation of Fiction almost. Like, if you basically like, the three albums in between, they kind of like, you know, try to figure out where are we going with this. And Moment is like, you know what? Like, we kind of try these things and we figure out what works and what doesn't work. And now, like, this is a follow-up to Fiction. Like, to me, sonically, this feels closest to Fiction with the things that they learn from the other albums.
And I like, but so this is why I like doing this with you, because you can be like, yeah, it actually is like related to this album or like reminds me of this album. So like after we're done, I can go and listen to it and be like, oh, it actually does feel more like an extension of that than this. Like I enjoy being able to hear your, the points you give, where, the similarities line up as a lifelong listener. I think that's cool.
Yeah, thanks. I think that, like you said, it's brighter. The production is kind of more clear because the production on those three albums were kind of like muted or something. And like it was kind of really moody. Moment is a little bit more, again, streamlined and has more moments. and I think, you know, it's not as strong as... I think, you know, Moment and Atoma have kind of different things going for them. So I think either is fine between those, but none of them is as good as Fiction, unfortunately.
That is true. Sorry. I'm sorry.
No. Yawning is the appropriate response to post-Fiction doctrine.
Wow.
No, no, all of the albums are good.
I'm teasing.
But I think that, when you have a band that has had such highs throughout their career, these albums, while good, they don't have the same high. I think it's like they had the really powerful energy in every album up until and including Fiction. But I think since then, the I don't feel the same energy from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't make the music less valid. I think it just makes it you know, just different. And I mean, it's what they're going for. If they're happy what they're going for, that's great. And when there's still moments like, you know, Zero Distance, Atoma, a few tracks from this one. I forget what the names of them. What was it called? Identical to None, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like those are some sick songs. But I think overall it doesn't feel as strong to me for what I'm looking for from this band. But I think Dark Tranquility don't really have a bad album. And even with these later albums that are not as memorable, maybe, they're still like cool stuff. Oh, Phantom Days also is really cool. Phantom Days is like a really fictiony song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever they do, they have a strong aesthetic that they do, and like they have a really unique sound that they bring. Basically, you know, there's something that you get from this band that no other band can really give you. And that's not something that you can say for a lot of bands. So I think overall, these guys are like a fantastic band. And like, I don't think that you can really go wrong with a Dark Tranquility album, even though some of the albums we didn't, you know, speak as positively about. They're still like just kick-ass band.
Yeah, I think I don't think that you can really go wrong listening to these albums. Just like sometimes it had the effect more of like when music washes over you and it's not like you don't appreciate it, but just like for some reason it just doesn't connect with you. Grab you in that way. I don't think there's, yep. But I think overall the material's quality, and for right now only having two of the founding members of the band left, like,
yep.
That's awesome. And they're still putting out quality music that is, like you said, aesthetically clear, and it has matching, I like the idea that like they don't necessarily go into everything like it's cookie cutter. They are like, what is the best for this, and then they do like they do that.
And even when they do like metalcore or whatever, like they have their own take on it that's like more Dark Tranquility than metalcore.
Yeah, it'll always be more them than the thing they are like trying to do.
Yep. So overall, I think, you know, if you were going to listen to Dark Tranquility, I would say check out The Gallery, Haven, Damage Done, Fiction. And depending on how you feel about those albums, there's more like it in either direction that you go towards. Right? If you listen to Fiction and you're like, you know, I want to be sadder, just go listen to like Atoma, I guess. If you want to listen to Gallery and you're like, you know what, this is like really solid. But I wanted a little bit more meat on the bones, just listen to Mind's Eye. Or if you're like, you know, you listen to Gallery and it's like, this isn't grim enough for me, go listen to Sky Dancer. If you listen to Haven and you're like, you know, this is cool, but I want to be even sadder, then you go listen to Projector. There's just like a lot of directions that you can go to. And like, I don't think, you know, you can really pick a wrong album. But I would say that, you know, We Are the Void and Construct, I would leave those albums for your deep dives, right? I would say if you're going to listen to something, probably don't start with those. But otherwise, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. But if you're going to listen to those albums, you're probably doing it because you're having like an obligation to listen to everything.
Sounds like that's how you felt.
I'm just kidding. It's good. I know. I really like, I'm not trying to diss those albums because I really don't do this to like, I'm not trying to diss any music. I enjoy it. Just my brain. So, it's my broken brain.
So what are the albums that's, you know, you resonated with the most, and what would you pick? What are your like, you know, if you still had CDs and whatnot in your car, which CDs would you have?
Ooh, I would have, I think, Projector, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I would have Atoma, and I think...
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Because I think also, like, I kind of think of, like, when I, like, was listening to music and, like, the albums that I saw and, like, I may have, like, seen more and been, like, I didn't check it out, but I thought it had a very interesting, like, aesthetic to it. And then actually getting into it, it feels like it would have been something that I, like, was into at the time.
Sure.
It almost is like kind of going like, I know that I probably would have felt a certain way about it at that time. And I feel like if I was driving, you know, in 2016, I definitely would have put like a sad album in the car. And that might have its projector also probably would have been a little bit more sad, too. But
they're different vibes.
Yes. And also, I think for the third one. I mean, I'd probably have Fiction, because, like, that feels like an album that, like, changed it. It feels like the album where they went, like, not more prog, but, like, I feel like that's an album that I would have also been into.
Yeah.
Had I heard it at the time, at 12 years old, I probably would have been like, this is pretty cool.
No, yeah, I think Fiction is a game changer. And, you can't really go wrong with any of the picks. And, yeah, I mean, this is a really cool band. I know they're like, you know, a well-known, popular-ish band, but like, I think people kind of underrate this band. And I think, you know, part of the point of this deep dive is to kind of go like, hey, wait, this thing that is good is like actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And like kind of appreciate things that maybe we take for granted. And I think people, you know, just go and like give some Dark Tranquility albums a listen based on, you know, what we said appealing to you.
And don't take melodic death metal for granted.
Yeah, melodic death metal is awesome. There's a lot of bad metal death out there that is like just completely uninspired, that is just like repetitive and like derivative, but Dark Tranquility is absolutely not that. Like, it nobody else sounds like Dark Tranquility, like, legitimately. Like, it's weird, you once you think about it, like, you would think that people would try to emulate the sound, but like, there really isn't anything else like it.
Nope.
All right, that's it. Do you want to talk about Village, or do we want to wrap it up?
Oh, we can talk about Village. I'm fine with that, yeah.
All right. Okay, Resident Evil Village is fucking awesome. I would say that it's top two Resident Evil for me. I love it so much.
I love it too.
Four and this for me.
I think it's a fantastic...
And I think, like...
Sorry, go ahead.
If I had to play it... one of them today, I would much rather play Village, because like I mean 4 is great, but like the, you know, modern conveniences of 8 are probably going to push me over. Now, you know, they're supposedly remaking 4, and there's also a VR remake coming out this year. You know, maybe that will kind of update it and make it more palatable, but like, I think, you know, Village is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think Village is an like, as someone who I hopped on the series with 7, and I had played some of like 6 before that, and even some of 5 whenever like the demo came out on Xbox 360 or whatever. But like, I never was super into the story, and then I got into it and I was like, okay, this is actually pretty cool. And so 7 to 8, just two a fantastic set of counterparts. Like as we're talking about, like, you know, a counterpoint or whatever, I think these are two very good counterpoints.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's like, well, first of all, I mean, this is the first time I feel like the story is, like, worth caring about. And, like, we have characters worth caring about.
Yep.
And, like, they're, like you said, like, one of them is, like, Texas Chainsaw style, you know, like, Southern slasher. And the other is, like, European horror. And, like, they're, like, so similar yet so different. And they complement each other really well. I think Village, I prefer Village a little bit, because it's just, like, more kind of campy. Like, so 7, the start, like the first bit of 7 is like better than anything in Village, but the rest of it is just so medium, I think. Like, it just like overstays its welcome, and like, it feels like a game where they kind of ran out of budget after the first bit, and then they just kind of you know, finished it up with whatever they had. Whereas 8 is just like really consistently good. Like, there's constantly new things being thrown at you. Like, each area is like completely different, and like a different genre of horror. And each of it kind of stands well on its own. And the like the level design is so cool. It feels so fun to explore. And like, the graphics are great. The atmosphere is great. Like, everything is so good about Village. Like, it's easily one of the best games of all time, I think. It's fucking amazing.
I agree. Like, I feel like in playing it, I'm now on the Village of Shadows difficulty. I'm almost through with it, but God, it is like just a ride from top to bottom, and it feels like a well sequenced ride as opposed to 7, where, like you said, it feels like it kind of overstays its welcome at points. Like whenever you kind of are getting to the end of 7, you're like, okay, like this could have ended a couple times, like, you know, hours ago.
Yeah, and there's like, you know, 8 has like more than 2 enemy types.
Yeah, it does have more than 2 enemy types, and also the enemy AI is very interesting. It's very aggressive.
Yeah, they're a lot more aggressive. Yep, for sure. Like, I think, you know, 7 is more horror and 8 is more action.
Yeah, for sure.
But like, I think the one criticism that you can have of 8 is that like, it's really easy to kite enemies a lot of the time. So it basically boils down to like put something in between you and them and then shoot them and like run around. So like, you know, Lady Dimitrescu is like not that scary because like she just like. So, okay. Spoilers for like the factory bit. I think I told you this. Mm-hmm. Where like, or maybe I told it to someone else, but like, I actually thought the roaming, like, normal enemies in the factory area were scarier than Lady Dimitrescu, because, like, those enemies are enemies that you could, like, fight and defeat, so they're tougher than Lady Dimitrescu, which you can't defeat, so your only option is to run away from her. So they've designed her so that, like, you can run away from her, and, like, you can't die to her if you know what you're doing. Whereas with the enemies that you have to fight, it's actually, like, you know, they're much more aggressive because they can be killed, means that they can make them more aggressive, because like then you have to think about whether you want to run or fight, and they're like on your toe, on your ass all the time. So that was like an interesting thing, but like overall, you know, the weapons are cool, the level design is really cool, the exploration is really fun, different areas, cool characters. You know, a story that I actually kind of cared about, despite like not ever like having a faceless fucking main character, to the point of like it being like really fucking funny. Yeah, I thought it was like a fucking awesome game, and like it's just the right length. Yeah, I love Village. It's awesome.
It is. My first playthrough where I actually like took, and I'm not trying to make like a value proposition on the game, because I'm already on my second playthrough and I've spent a lot of time with it, but like in total in playtime, my first playthrough was 9 hours, and that's like seeing a lot of stuff.
But yeah,
but
I,
then sorry, go
and
ahead.
My first.
Sorry, no, you go ahead. Seriously, I'm fine with it. Just I was gonna say on New Game Plus, like you do get, you know, different stuff, but like, and it gets harder.
There's mercenaries.
Go ahead.
Is mercenaries out or is it coming later?
Mercenaries is out with the game. It's in the bonus content menu. Okay.
I see. Yeah, I haven't opened it back up yet again, but I've been meaning to. Just like been a busy week for me.
Mm-hmm. Understandable.
For me, my first playthrough that I basically 100%ed it, I think I missed like one or two goats, but otherwise I got all the foods, all the weapons, all the upgrades. I blued every room. And it took me, let me see how long it took me.
I blued every room.
I'm trying
room
to boot up
rules.
Steam. You know what I mean?
Yes, I
it
do
sounds really
know
stupid.
No, but like that is the only way to say it. You blew every room, and I get it.
Steam, of course, is being like oddly okay. Apparently, it took me 11 and a half hours to do that in my standard playthrough. I will say, standard, especially if you're like a little bit experienced with this type of game, standard is a bit too easy.
Yeah.
I would like the first bit of the game, there's like a difficulty spike in the end of the intro, but bear with it. And I probably would have played it hardcore knowing how the rest of the game would be. But now I'm going to try Village of Shadows as well. So that's going to be fun.
Yes, I would also say start on hardcore, and the part towards the end of the intro, I think you may have to outlast like some enemies. I don't know if it's like you have to kill them, but just that is the point where I had to switch over to standard, because I just was trying to see what was happening and I didn't want to spend like a ton of time like on this one section. Yeah.
Just bear with it.
Yes, bear with it, but you will get, I think, a better challenge on hardcore than on standard, because until the end of standard, you're really not even wanting for much. You don't.
Yeah. In standard, throughout my entire playthrough, and this is not really a flex, but I died like maybe one or two times, and like one of it was to like a scripted event, like not a combat thing. And I think I died on the final boss once, because like I had like I was very low on healing items, and I was assuming that they would give me more, and they didn't. So I kind of like died, but that was basically it.
Yeah, I definitely recommend like if you play it on Village of Shadows though. And it's a new game plus thing. That's the only way you can play it, because playing Village of Shadows from scratch seems like it would be hell.
Yeah. But, you know, that's what you're into. Hey, go ahead.
Yeah,
but I think for new game plus, it seems good. Like, I mean, the thing is, like, the enemies, they're like, they like the mold in RE7 were like really slow. Mm-hmm. But the enemies here are like really fast, and like they move around all the time. And it's really hard to like hit them consistently. And like, they take like more than a full magazine if you're not headshotting them. And if even if you are headshotting them, they'll like basically take almost a full magazine.
Yeah. The one thing that like real like if you I powered up a few of my weapons and like pretty powerful, and even still like shooting them in the head, it'll take sometimes like it if you like just miss a little bit, it'll take two shots from like a super powerful rifle.
Yeah. So like the game, but that I think that's good, because like this game isn't Call of Duty, right? Like
yeah.
It's supposed to be challenging, and like you have to think and you have to survive. So I appreciate that.
I do too. I use a lot of the mines, and I use a lot of the pipe bombs.
Yep, that's kind of the secret, because those are actually really easy to craft.
Yeah.
So you gotta like utilize those. That took me some time to figure out, but like that was basically the trick, I guess, to the game.
Yeah, once you are in this, once you're in Village of Shadows, like, I can't, you have to use them, or you will die every time.
Yep. Ah, but it's such a good game.
It
I
is.
Love it so much. It's like, you know, I mean, I really liked 7, but I felt like they might kind of just botch this one, mm-hmm. because it's Capcom, you know, they just, like, do dumb things sometimes, but, like... I wasn't expecting them to make a game this much better than 7. And 7 is pretty good.
Yeah, I think it does improve on pretty much, like, if I had an issue with 7, this addresses that issue.
Yep. The only thing that, again, you might find lacking is the, like, if you want a more kind of horror experience, like the early mansion parts in 7. There's some of that here, but that's not, like, the main focus here. So that might be the only thing that I think someone might find kind of lacking, I guess.
And I still think there is plenty of horror to be found. Think that in the shadows and lighting, you can see many things that are spooky and scary, and things that will try and kill you.
Yeah, and like I alluded this to with the Dimitrescu versus the other enemies thing. Like, to me, enemies that I can fight are scarier than enemies that I can't.
Yeah, Dimitrescu like, is like Mr. X.
Yeah, but like I'm trying to think what my favorite horror games are. I think my favorite horror games are like The Evil Within 2 is amazing, by the way. If you haven't played that, if you like Village, I think you would really enjoy it.
I have bad news for you. I started it and never finished it. And I played through The Evil Within 1 specifically so I could play that game, and then the ADD brain kicked in and I did not finish it. But I will finish it.
Yeah.
I can reinstall it at any time.
I mean, it's up to you. But like the way the open world is designed in Evil Within 2 is really clever, because like, you know, normally in open world games you like just like basically becomes a collectathon, right?
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that you're trying to balance is your time, right? Whereas in Evil Within 2, they do this really clever thing where collect like the optional stuff comes at a cost. So either you have to go through something really spooky or some like really tough survival situation. And that's a really interesting thing, because like it's like if you do it, you'll get an upgrade, but like it's a risk reward thing. So there's like a decision that you have to make, which I thought was like really interesting. And also like it also has like a colorful cast of characters like Village does, and Yeah, I love that game. I also really like the first Outlast game, and that's one like where you can't really fight the enemies, so you have to run away. But I thought that was like kind of well designed. But otherwise, you know, generally I prefer horror games where there's challenging combat instead of like no combat whatsoever. Because otherwise it just becomes like frustrating to me. And oftentimes those kind of run and hide type horror games don't have like good checkpoints. So it's just like trial and error until you figure out how to juke the boss. And then if you can't do that, you just lose a lot of progress. So it's just like frustrating. Whereas in these games, it's like it's up to me to survive. So I like that.
Yeah, I feel much more in control with these games.
Anyway, yeah, check out Village. Check out Dark Tranquility. Good stuff.
Both, yes. Please check out both. Please, please, please.
And we'll put up the poll for next time. We discussed it a little bit internally. Like, you know, Machine Head is one thing that we want to do, but apparently they have a new album coming out, so we may want to wait for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's on the menu was In Flames.
Okay.
Keep of Kolesin. I kind of don't want to do Korn. Do you want to do Korn?
I mean, I wouldn't mind doing Korn, but at the same time, if you don't want to do it, obviously I'm not going to, like, say, yeah, I'm stoked for Korn.
No, I mean, I'm not super excited for it, I guess is what I mean. I can do it,
no,
but
then
I just feel...
Take it off. Seriously, just take it off. Don't even worry about it.
Dimmuborgir is the other one.
Yes, Dimmuborgir. That would be very good.
In Flames, Keep a Class in Dimmu. Do you want to add a fourth one?
I always feel bad because I feel like I have one to add and then it'll like leave my head. I'm trying to... Because like I don't want to think of like a band that's going to punish you. But I also don't want to think of a band that's like...
I think as long as the band's interesting to talk about, either in a good or bad way, then that's cool.
Yeah. You know what?
Quality content for the listeners.
This is quality content for the listeners. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Take your time. Think about it. In the meantime, I'll just talk. You can ignore me. So, there once was a ship that put to sea in the name of the sea.
Wow. You are so funny, Noyan. I don't know, Meshuggah?
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I know. That's cool. I like that. That's a good one.
All
right, so I'll do these.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't say that. I'll do these. That's cool.
I mean, I just think that's an interesting one because I have heard like latter part of their discography, but a lot of the earlier stuff I have not like intentionally gone and listened to.
Yep.
So I think that'd be a very interesting one, and also because I like I already know that I can like get through so, like a lot of their albums, or like I know I can get through some of their albums and enjoy it, and it's not like a. It's not going to be like an experience that I think anyone would think is super tedious unless they hate Meshuggah.
Yeah. I don't love Meshuggah, but I think they're a really interesting band.
Yes.
So that'll be interesting because like I've listened to all of their albums quite a bit. And never really kind of connects with me, but I think I have a lot of things to say about them. And, you know, they're an interesting band and, of course, a very important band. So it'll be good to talk about.
All right. Well, then that is my recommendation.
All right. Cool. Thank you. And thanks to the listeners for listening.
Yes. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you.
Bye, listeners.
Bye, listeners. Wrap around. I will. Yeah.